Today, we celebrate the final Sunday of what's called Ordinary Time. For many of you who may not be familiar with this, the Catholic Church does not run on a calendar year. The Catholic Church runs on what's called the liturgical year. And the liturgical year always starts 4 Sundays before December 25th, before Christmas Day. And so to know when the church year is starting, all you have to do is look at Christmas Day and then count 4 Sundays backwards. And then the Sunday before that, which is today, is the start of the end of the previous liturgical year. And at the end of the previous liturgical year, the last Sunday of the liturgical year is called Christ the King Sunday. Now, this feast day has a curious history because it is a feast day that was begun and proclaimed, and I should have looked it up before I started, but it was right after World War I. Between World War I and World War II, the Pope, which I think was maybe Pius XI, I don't remember, but the Pope proclaimed the feast day of Christ the King. Now, the reason he did that is because what he saw was that in World War I, the reason World War I started was not like World War II, where there was the menace and it was started by the Nazis in Germany. World War I started with groups of nations who were wanting to be sort of better than the other. And so you had, for example, Germany wanting to be better than Great Britain, which was the two main rivals. And World War I began because of exaggerated nationalism. Now, please understand, that word these days is going back and forth between Democrats and Republicans being bantered about. I said exaggerated nationalism. We're better and you don't matter, and we're about to show it to you. Okay? And that is when, after the war, which was a disaster for everyone, that's when the Pope said, "You're all wrong. None of you is better than anybody else. The one who is the King is Jesus Christ, the King of the universe. All power belongs to him." And so, on that, he was making an assertion about the central dogma, the central piece of what it means to be a Christian. The central piece of Christianity is, who is Jesus? It's not about any of the commandments. It's the question of, who is he? And Jesus knew that. During the time of his life, several times he probably turned to his disciples and he said, "Who do people say that I am?" And of course, there was all kinds of rumors. "You're a prophet, you're Elijah, you're all kinds of stuff." And then Jesus one time turns to the disciples and said, "But you, who do you say that I am?" And from the very beginning, Jesus is conscious that his identity is the center. Because, you know, a lot of times I hear people say, "Well, Jesus never said that he was God." Yes, he did. But he didn't use the word God. Imagine that someone stands before you and says to you, I know the truth, but I am the truth. Now, what do you do with that? When somebody says, I am the truth, he's either C.S. Lewis, one of the great thinkers of Western civilization. He died in the middle of the 20th century. He said, look, the one thing you can't say about Jesus, but he was a really good prophet, but you don't believe he's God. You can't really, I mean, you could say it, but it's absurd to say it. And why? Because if somebody says to you, I am truth, I am the way, unless you love your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, your son, your daughter, whatever, less than me, unless you love me more than they, you're not worthy of me. Doesn't sound a bit arrogant to you? Well, of course it does. And that's why C.S. Lewis says, look, when Jesus does stuff like that, you have to make a decision. It's either one of three things. The guy is lunatic. The guy is just bone crazy. And if you have somebody who's bone crazy, he can't be a wonderful man. He's crazy. Well, and if he's not crazy, what could he be? Well, he could be the world's most monumental liar. In which case, he's not a great man either. He's not a great man because a liar or a lunatic cannot be considered great men. Not only that, if his lunacy or his lies turn out to be the case, he is the worst human being that has ever existed, because millions of people have been led into a delusion by him. That's not a great man. That's not a great man. And so he's a liar. He's a lunatic. Or, as C.S. Lewis says, he is the Lord. He is the Lord of the universe standing before you. It's interesting because I teach a lot, and I teach a group of young adults, which, by the way, if I forget or forget, on Tuesday nights at 7:30 to 9, I teach a course that is limited to young adults. Now, what is a young adult? A young adult is between 18 and 25. Now, if you're 17 or a little bit over 25, we don't check IDs. Okay? You can say, I am young in spirit. Now, if you have no hair or it's all falling out, I may question you. But I say to the kids, young adults, I say to them, what would happen if you were to come with me to a cemetery and I were to say on a grave, dig it up, and you dig the grave up, and finally you get to the coffin, and then I said, open it up, and then you see, open the coffin up, and then I say, get up and get out of that grave. Now, can anybody do that? Yes. Yes. I can do that tomorrow. Nothing will happen. Okay? But I can do it. I can do it. But what if you were standing there and all of a sudden the dead person sat up, looked at you, and got up out of the grave? How would you react? You know what most of the young adults say? I'd run as fast as I possibly could. But I want you to analyze the issue. Why would you run? Why? You would run because someone of that, anybody can do it, but to actually have it happen would scare the bejeebies out of you. Why? Because you would realize that someone of ultimate power was standing before you. And when somebody of ultimate power is standing before you, you're scared. That kind of man is Jesus, the King of the universe. Now, I want to use a word to help you to appreciate not only that word, but the depth of what it means to say Jesus is the King of the universe. I did this in class one time. I want to use the word Catholic, because I bet if I were to ask people here, what does the word Catholic mean? Most of you would raise your hand and say, universal. And that's kind of okay. But it really is a fairly, if it's not well understood, it's not a very great answer, even though it's okay. So I want you to understand the word Catholic and how it applies to Jesus. Not how it applies to the Catholic Church first. But I want you to understand how the word Catholic applies to Jesus. And I want to say something that might go, what, to you. Jesus is Catholic. Now, at first that might go, what? Yeah. But not the way you think he's Catholic. He's Catholic in the most profound sense of the word. Follow me. Now, I wish I would have had a diagram that I could have put there. Actually, let's use the diagram of Jesus right there, that circle. Now, I want you to imagine that from the top of that circle, there is an arrow that goes like that, pointing with an arrowhead at the top and points up. Then I want you to imagine that there is also an arrow from the bottom of the circle pointing down. And then I want you to imagine that there is an arrow from the left of the circle pointing to the left, and an arrow from the right of the circle pointing to the right. And in the center, there is Jesus. Now, focus on the arrow in your mind that's pointing from the top of the circle all the way up. What does that signify? We normally identify God as up there. Okay? And so, by that symbol, what we're saying is that Jesus is the fullness of God. He is the fullness of God. Now, the word Catholic, would be good for you to remember. The word Catholic, of course, it does mean universal. But, if it just was that, why couldn't we just say, hey, I go to St. Cyril of Alexandria Universal Church? Why use the word Catholic at all? Because it says something profound. You see, the word Catholic, as I've said it several times, but it comes from two Greek words, kato, K-A-T-O, and holos, H-O-L-O-S, kato, holos. Now, kato, holos in Greek means concerning the whole. Holos is where we get the word whole. If you take H-O-L-O-S, and put a W in front of it, you get pretty close to our word whole. And kato is regarding the whole or encompassing the whole. And so whenever you say anything is kato holos, you get the fullness. Now, in your head, put those words next to each other. And what you get in your head is the last O of kato is separated by an H with another O of holos. Now you got two O's separated by an H. And so the more you say it, kato holos, people tend to drop the first O of kato. And so what do you get? K-A-T instead of O, K-A-T-H-O-L-O-S, katholos. And you can start to hear the word Catholic come from that. So the word Catholic means he encompasses the whole thing. So what does that arrow going from the top of the circle upward? It means that Jesus is the fullness, the wholeness of God. There is no more of God to be found. He is the wholeness of God. I'm going to give you a related word. Catholicity. Catholicity is the katoholos, meaning Jesus is the fullness, the katoholos, the catholicity of God. He is the fullness, the catholicity of God. Now let's go to the arrow pointing downward. What is that? Jesus is the for all, the concerning the whole of human beings. He is the fullness of what a human being is supposed to be. He is the catholicity of humanity. And well that he should be, because he is God become human. It's almost like God said, y'all have screwed this up. Remember that old saying, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. God becomes human. Why? To show us what a human being is supposed to look like before we screwed it up. Jesus is the fullness of what it means to be human. He is the catholicity of humanity. And so you have the fullness of God, the fullness of humanity, and now let's take the arrow to the left. And that we're going to make time. You heard it in the gospel today, or in one of the readings. He is before all else that is. I am, I was, I am, and I will be. I am who was, who is, and who is to come. In him, and this is all the Bible, in him all things were created, all time. And in the Gospel of St. John, if you remember the Gospel of St. John, the beginning of the Gospel of St. John, in the beginning was the Word. Who's he referring to? It's referring to Jesus. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Jesus is the beginning and the end of time. He is the beginning and the end of time. He is the Alpha and the Omega. He is the catholicity of time. And then the final arrow to the right. Space. In him all things were created. And nothing was created that did not find its being in him. All things, I'm quoting the Bible, all things have their being and continue to be in him. He is present in every molecule of the universe. He is Him in whom all things were created. There is not one piece of the universe that is not in Him. He is the Catholicity of the universe. All of a sudden, you have the fullness of God, the fullness of man, the fullness of time, and the fullness of space. Jesus is the Catholic. The Catholic. He is the reason why we use the term. Now, why do we call the church the Catholic Church? Let me just give you a quick example. You see this bald guy right here? Right here, this bald guy. This bald guy, he actually has a name. The name is Larry. Now, I can say that the head, which is quite shiny, that the head is called Larry. Okay? So the head of the church is called Larry. Excuse me. The head of the church is called Jesus. What should I call the rest of Larry's body? If the head of Larry is called Larry, what should the rest of his body? Should it have a different name? Or does the name of the head apply to the entire body? Duh. Of course it does. Of course it does. And so we call the church Catholic because Jesus is the head of the church, and He is the definition of what it means to be Catholic. He is, therefore, if you all of that is true, He is the King of the universe. And I'm not talking about a king here, you know, like a ceremonial king, you know, like when we see the British royals. You know, everybody's all crazy about over the royalty and Meghan, what's her name? The lady who just married the guy, the actress, I don't remember her name. I used to be in love with her, but that's life. She married, but the king of Queen of England, they don't have real any power. So we don't know about that. We don't have an idea of what an all-powerful king would be like. And so we tend to dismiss it as, oh, the king. Yeah, oh, isn't that nice? Jesus, you're the king. Let's put a little crown on. Yeah. And the reason is we live in a democracy. And we think that democracy is the best thing in the world. And it, let me tell you, out of all the other forms of human government, all of them are bad. The least worst is a democracy. Right? It's the least worse. But democracy cannot be deified. You can't make a god out of democracy. You see, and this is some of the last parts. I'm getting to the, we're starting our descent, okay, into the final arrival. When I was in graduate school, I did a research project on, it was on government, and I focused on democracy. And I learned the distinction that has served me well. The distinction is that there is absolute democracy, and then there is procedural democracy. Now, what's the difference? Absolute democracy would say that the people, which is what the mean demos means, the people, have all power. So basically, we can say whatever the people decide, no matter what it is the truth. It is the way it's going to be. And so, for example, let's imagine that all of you in this church had to vote. And you say, the thing that you were voting on would be any person who is bald is not human. Okay? What if all of you voted that proposition as true? It would mean that Larry and I and several other people that I can see throughout here would be stripped of our humanity. Why? Because we voted. We voted. And you all said it was that way. Another little one that I enjoy using is, imagine five animals voting on what to have for lunch. Five animals. They're going to vote. It's going to be democratic. Only it's three wolves and two sheep. It's not going to go so well for the sheep. Absolute democracy is whatever the people want is what the people get. What's procedural democracy? Procedural democracy says there are some things that are not up for discussion. There are some things that are true regardless of whether you vote on them or not. Now, at first, that may sound, well, wait a minute. No, that's the Declaration of Independence. Remember? In the Declaration of Independence, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident. What does that mean? It means we ain't going to vote on them. We're not going to vote on them. These are the basis. You don't get to decide whether all people are equal. We don't vote on that. You don't vote on the fact that we were endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights. Inalienable means you have those rights by your humanity. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You have those by your humanity. You know what? I never thought about this. Do you know that no matter how hard you try, you cannot sell yourself into slavery? You know why? Because you don't even have the freedom to alienate your own liberty. You can't sell yourself into slavery. It's inalienable means you can't make an alien out of it, even by you, because it's built in to your creation. And so procedural democracy says, okay, we start with these things. You got to have a floor. If you don't have a floor, you have nowhere to stand on. And everything is up for a vote. But this is the floor. And from here, let's figure out the procedure to live this out. And that's when you get the Constitution. The Constitution is the document that is trying to tell you the procedure to live out the inalienable rights. That's the procedure. That is good democracy. Absolute democracy is dictatorship. The dictatorship of the majority. And so what are we doing today? What we're doing today, and I'm bringing it in for a landing. What we're doing today is recognizing that that man and that man, is king of the entire universe and not a ceremonial one. That man is the center of reality, the center of the universe. He is the center of the universe. He does not care whether you vote for him or not. It is irrelevant whether you like him or not. It is irrelevant. It's an emergency. One of those alerts, Amber Alert. It's going off all over the church. You better take out your phone and clear it. Anyway, he doesn't care. He doesn't care whether you vote for him or not. He doesn't run for office. He doesn't care if he is popular. He is what he is, the king of the universe. That is the floor. Listen to all the Amber Alerts going off. Actually, that's kind of good, you know? It's kind of good that they have a way of, just check your Amber Alert, otherwise we'll have them going through the entire Mass. Okay? So, that's why this feast is so important. Extremely important. Because what it does is it gives you the floor. Without that, we don't know where we stand. We don't know where we're going. Because he is the center of reality. He is Jesus Christ, the King of the universe. God bless.